Breaking News on AM 770 KTTH.
We go into the press conference live with President Donald Trump.
Somebody is taken to the hospital. It seems that the shooting was done by law enforcement at that person, at the suspect. It was the suspect who was shot. And this just took place. A couple of people outside. I noticed a man named John Roberts, who you know very well.
Yes.
He reported that he heard shots. He was outside and he heard two shots.
Mr. President, was this a threat towards you, sir?
We don't know yet. We don't know. They're going to find out.
Do you know if the individual said anything, sir? Mentioned your name, anything like that?
We don't know that yet.
It was the Secret Service that did shoot this suspect?
It seems to be, yeah.
It seems to be.
Where were you taking, Mr. President? Were you taking to the bunker?
No, we're taking just out over to the Oval Office.
What did the Secret Service tell you when you were outside of the room?
Just told me when he came up, you pretty much saw it like I did. He said, sir, could you please come with me? So you were surprised. I was surprised also. I think it's probably pretty unusual. But very, very professional people. They do a fantastic job, as you know. So it seems to me, it seems to be from what I was said, there was a shooting. It was law enforcement shot someone, seems to be the suspect, and the suspect is now on the way to the hospital. I can't tell you the condition of the suspect. There was nobody else injured. There was no other law enforcement injured. And I just want to, we'll get on to the press conference, but I do want to thank Secret Service. They are fantastic. The job they do. From what I understand, the answer is yes.
He was armed, Mr. President?
That's what I understand. I don't know. You'll have to ask them.
Was he armed with what type of weapon?
I don't know that.
Was it a male or a female suspect?
I don't know. You'll have to get there. They'll have a detailed, maybe a briefing for you outside later.
Did they say anything against you personally?
I don't know. I didn't ask that question.
It
might not have had anything to do with me. It might have been something else. But it was on the outside of the premises. The wall, the as you know, the fencing, especially the new fencing that they put up, is very powerful. But it was on the outside of the White House. Okay? And they'll have a full report. Secret Service. In a little while, we'll have a full report.
Are you rattled by this at all, Mr. President?
I don't know. Do I seem rattled? It's unfortunate that this is a world, but the world's always been a dangerous place. It's not something that's unique. The world has been, you look back over the centuries, the world has been a dangerous place, very dangerous place, and it will continue, I guess, for a period of time.
Differently about your personal safety inside the White House?
No, I feel very safe with Secret Service. They're fantastic people. They're the best of the best, and they're highly trained. I don't know if anybody got to walk outside, but there were a lot of terrific looking people ready to go if something was necessary. People at the highest level of law enforcement. There's nobody like these people. So they just wanted me to step aside for a little while just to make sure that everything was cleared outside because it was right in this area.
Why did you decide after that? Because obviously it created a lot of commotion. What made you decide to come back and continue the briefing?
Well, I didn't even think about not coming back. I said, am I able to go back? And they said, you'd have to wait a little while. I waited a little while, as you know, in the Oval Office area. And I said, can I get back now? And they said, yes. And they have a lot of fortification outside just in case, but it was one person.
Okay? He said the shooting was outside. How far away from the White House?
They're going to be giving you a full briefing in a little while.
Far from the White House, or was it right in front?
I can only tell you they're going to give you a briefing. It was outside of the premises. Near the fence, but outside of the premises.
Pretty close.
So I was telling you that the Dow Jones.
Okay, so that was President Donald Trump. We'll stick with this for just a couple more minutes as we get an update on the coronavirus response and the economic response.
New records. It's already broken the record despite the situation of having the China virus. We have new jobs arising and unemployment is falling faster than nearly anyone thought. And over the past 3 months, we've created over 9 million jobs. And that's a record, a 3-month record. If you add it up, it's a 3-month record by far. And we've beaten expectations by 12 million. We're 12 million above expectations, which is pretty remarkable. Today we had great reports on new job openings, and there's clearly a housing boom, which has been incredible numbers in both housing and an automobile boom. We've rarely seen anything like it, and it's going on right now in America. Inventory.
Okay, so that is the president. Just to give you an update, since we kind of broke into this with breaking news as it happened, as you heard there during the opening remarks, the president said there was some kind of shooting right outside of the White House complex. This was outside on the other side of the fence, but he said it was very close to the fence. Everyone got a little bit concerned as during the beginning of the press briefing, the president was speaking and he had just started just a few minutes earlier. And then all of a sudden, Secret Service agent came up to him, whispered in his ear, and he was ushered off. It was a controlled ushering off. He wasn't hurried. He wasn't pulled out. He walked off on his own.
Where they're going, it looks like they're just about going to be topping records, hopefully soon. Excuse me?
And so as you heard some of the reporters there asking what happened, shots were fired outside of the complex. And he handled it rather well. I couldn't quite hear what the Secret Service agent was whispering to him. But, I mean, he said, oh, okay. And then the president wandered out. He was out for about 10 or so-ish minutes before coming back to the podium to answer some questions as to why he left. And he gave us the details. He didn't have that many details as far as the suspect who was shot. We don't know why the individual was shot. We do know that it was one individual, according to the president. We expect to get some kind of briefing at some point within the next hour or so. He was asked by some folks at the actual press briefing whether or not he was rattled. And he made the point, do I seem rattled? He's taking this fine. He was never in any danger. Doesn't sound like anyone outside of those who were directly involved, as we get those details, we'll bring them to you, were in any danger. Obviously, they cleared out the press room and reporters were briefly outside. We heard from John Roberts from Fox News, who, as this happened, he went on live and indicated he heard what sounded like shots being fired. We don't know exactly how many shots fired. Again, we don't know the details as to what happened. But we do know that the president is obviously okay. He is continuing his press briefing. They're talking about the vaccine that might be available for the coronavirus before the end of the year. We're going to keep an ear out on that and tell you if anything of note comes up. But we're following a lot of other stories locally that demand our attention. So with that, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Back the blue.
Despite pushback from the mayor, despite pushback from the police chief and the police union, and thousands of pro-police community members, the Seattle City Council is getting ready to cut at least 100 jobs from the SPD. This would impact not just patrol officers as it goes about their day, obviously not being able to do their job. They're going to be losing it. But of course, that means we lose out on the service that these officers are providing to the community. And what we can tell you right now is that we've seen in this region an increase in crime. Crime that is very apparent and obvious to those of us who follow the news. A surge of gun violence, for example, in this region. But of course, we're also seeing a surge in looting and rioting and vandalism that is not going punished because cops are not able to do their jobs. And so what we're going to end up seeing in this vote that is imminent after a morning and afternoon of debating various amendments, they're going to eliminate up to 100 sworn police officers via layoffs, but also attrition. They are going to cap the pay of the command staff to $150,000. They tried to cut Chief Carmen Best to that level as well, but they renegotiated that, they redebated, they reconsidered, and now she is going to see a decrease in her salary, but it's not going to be so dramatic. And we're also going to see the ending of the navigation team. That is of particular concern to those of us who understand the impact homelessness has had on the city of Seattle. The navigation team is a specialized group of police officers who are going out into the community, connecting with people who are living out on the streets, and giving them options to take us all up on our offer of services of shelter, or the encampments are swept. Now, because there's consequences to living out on the streets, the council says that's inhumane. So they're getting rid of the navigation team. You're also going to see cuts or reductions of specialized units, including the Harbor Patrol unit, the SWAT team, the public affairs unit, which is interesting because we're talking about how to have a better conversation or relationship between the police and the community. And so they're going to get rid of a bunch of people whose jobs include telling the community about what's going on with the SPD. That makes sense. They're going to cut the school resource officers, at least five. So God forbid there's ever a need for an officer on a high school campus. It's going to take that much longer for an already understaffed SPD to get to the scene of that crime. We're seeing cuts of $800,000 in their retention and recruitment efforts, because when you are actively trying to abolish the police, it doesn't make any sense to ask people to apply. Now, what we know about these 100 officers that are going to lose their positions, they will overwhelmingly be represented by people of color. Over the last 1.5 to 2 years, the SPD has been working hard to get a more diverse workforce, going into the Black community, the Latino community, hiring African-Americans and Latinos to take on positions of police in the police department so that they can be a better reflection of the community that they serve. And under policy, you don't fire, you don't lay off the veteran officers who are majority white. You lay off the newly hired police officers who have the least amount of experience, who have the least amount of hours on the job. And so what this ends up doing is letting go Black and Latino and Asian officers. This coming from the woke Seattle City Council, who talked about the importance of a diverse workforce. They're the ones responsible for firing Black and Latino cops once this nonsense passes. Now, we did hear from Lisa Herbold telling us how she's all about diversity. You could just go ahead and ask for special permission to fire the veteran officers on the basis of their whiteness, which is, of course, illegal and doesn't make sense. So we'll see how that happens. Now, I said at the top, this is happening despite the fact that over the weekend, we saw thousands of people showing up to Seattle City Hall to speak up on behalf of cops. Folks came from all over Seattle and all over the region to say once and for all, this attack on police officers is going too far, and the moves by this council, a council with at least three members, one reelected, two elected for the first time, campaigning on the promise of more cops, not less. More cops, not less. Dan Strauss said, we have the best trained police force in the entire country. No wonder why people want to hire them away from us. We need more cops, he said. We have Andrew Lewis, who came out and said we need more cops because, frankly, there are so many crimes happening in downtown Seattle. Prolific criminals, and we need to address it with more police officers. Lisa Herbold, over and over and over again, talked about how it's important to fully staff the SPD. And all of a sudden, they've done an about-face. Why did they do that? Because some protesters got angry. Protesters that these three council members are counting on to keep them in office. But let me tell you something. These activists, Antifa goons, agitators, criminal rioters, the ones that right now Lisa Herbold, Andrew Lewis, Dan Strauss are listening to, they're going to be responsible for why those three don't have a job after this next election when they're up for re-election. But you know what? I keep hearing rumors that there's going to be a challenge trying to kick some of these folks out of office, a recall. We've talked about the recall against Mayor Jenny Durkan by the activist community. That's not going to go anywhere because those activists represent a very small group of Seattleites. There are way more of us than there are of them. And if I were Dan Strauss or Andrew Lewis in particular, I'd be terrified. Because as someone who actually lives in Andrew Lewis's district, which includes Queen Anne, downtown, South Lake Union, we don't want less cops. We know what's happening in downtown Seattle, and we don't want it to spread. Dan Strauss is in trouble because, hey, what's going on in Ballard? Homelessness is taking over huge chunks of that neighborhood. And all of a sudden, now is the time to get rid of the navigation team? We are on the right side of this. They are not. This council is not. And how do I know that? Because I saw so many people show up to that rally. There were so many more of the pro-police people than the agitators on the other side. But they showed up to try to pick fights. They showed up to burn an American flag. They showed up to assault a photojournalist and a woman trying to put out the fire on that American flag. And as I was there and I was videotaping the entire time, they were threatening me too.
Hey, if I see your face outside of this, I will spray paint your phone. Just letting you know that.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to spray paint you.
As you can hear there, the threat against me, obviously, she's a crazy person. And she was throughout the entire day yesterday looking at all the white people, ironically saying, I don't talk to white people, as she was talking to white people. And then this group, similar group, some of them looked the same based on some of the video that I've seen. Later that night, they decided to march and do what they've done in the past, which is go and target specific businesses for vandalism. They got together, they marched around the city chanting horrible things. So these people, of course, are lunatics and cretins. But they have the right to hold unpopular and despicable opinions on cops. What they don't have the right to do is go, again, to destroy businesses. They broke the glass doors at the Chase Bank and Key Bank on Capitol Hill. They went to a Starbucks they had previously destroyed, pulled down the boards trying to protect the business, and then re-vandalized, and then, yet again, destroyed an Amazon storefront. This behavior is rewarded in the city of Seattle. That behavior is rewarded in the city of Seattle. Our peaceful assembly is ignored. The emails and the calls that you have made to council members, ignored. And they're going to move through with this vote and pass this new budget and continue down this path to decimating the Seattle Police Department. And it's going to spread, I promise you. It's going to spread to Bellevue, to Everett, to Auburn, to Puyallup, to Linwood, to Tacoma, to Spokane, to Yakima. When aggressive activists like those in Seattle, who under threat of violence and destruction, when they get their way, it inspires their counterparts all across the Washington region. There's someone right now, an Antifa loser in Olympia, who's looking at what's going on here, and they are waiting for this budget to pass, for this win for the anti-cop side. And they're going to say, if they could do it in Seattle, I sure as heck can do it in Olympia. Oh my gosh, I can definitely do it in Kent. Oh man, if they can get this done in Seattle, you think we can't get this done in Shoreline? This is how it works. Now, those of you who have been listening to my coverage of this topic for the last, what, month and a half? You're not shocked that we lost this one particular battle. I told you we were going to lose this. No matter any of the emails you send or the phone calls or the rally you attended, you knew this one was going to be a loss for us. It's not about this one particular fight. It's about the entire battle. It's the entire war. It's not this one skirmish. Because as we lose this, you're going to start to feel angry that you were ignored. Three polls done in the last 10 days or so show overwhelming opposition to this plan. They are doing it anyway. And you're going to feel angry. And then you're going to feel resentment. You're going to resent that this council ignored you, didn't get back to the email that you sent to Andrew Lewis, or the email afterwards, or the email after that saying, hey, did you get my email? I'd love a response. You're going to resent being treated that way. And I want you to feel that anger and resentment and allow it to propel you forward to backing the recall effort that I assume is going to happen. Getting ready to spend your time and, yes, some of your money backing that movement. Volunteering to collect signatures. Volunteering to make phone calls. Volunteering to spend your time promoting that recall. We get the government that we deserve. Andrew Lewis and Dan Strauss and Lisa Herbold and Shama Sawant, they were elected by the people of Seattle. Some of them knew what they were getting. When they put in Shama Sawant, everyone knew exactly what they were getting. Tammy Morales, a socialist, everyone knew what they were getting. Dan Strauss, not so much. Andrew Lewis, not so much. Lisa Herbold, you should have known, but people were fooled. Teresa Mosqueda, Lorena Gonzalez, they represent all of Seattle. Do they represent you? Do they represent your family or friends that live in Seattle or your coworkers that live in Seattle? No, they don't. But they're in office because they won elections. We get the government that we deserve. And so get angry, get resentful, and get ready, more importantly, to put those feelings into a recall effort that, again, I assume is going to happen. And if it doesn't, that's okay. That's okay, too. We've got an election coming up in November, and how amazing would it be if we booted Jay Inslee out of office because of his lack of leadership on this? How amazing would it be to put Lauren Culp in that mansion in Olympia? Someone who cares deeply about law and order. How amazing would it be to get Matt Larkin in the Attorney General's office, putting pressure so that we can actually prosecute the people who go into our businesses, into our neighborhoods, and commit acts of terrorism? How amazing would it be to win back Washington's 8th from Kim Schreier, a Seattle progressive Democrat who represents Washington's 8th? You want to stop it from spreading there? You put in Jesse Jensen. There is so much that we can do, but we do have to work together. But you do have to be motivated. Not by defeat. Don't feel down that we were defeated in this. Get angry, get resentful, and utilize that to be inspired. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. Welcome back to The Jason Rant Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really do appreciate it. A few hundred worshipers and activists yesterday went to Cal Anderson Park in Seattle for a rally called Let Us Worship. And in essence, what it's doing is calling out the double standard where you can protest in large groups, especially if you're Antifa or agitators. You get to go together in large groups, but apparently you can't get together in modest groups if you're praying in a church, if you're going to a temple, if you're going to a mosque. Now, both acts are protected by the same amendment. You get to go out and protest. You also are supposed to be allowed to go out and pray. Only one of those actions is being stopped. Is being overly regulated. Not just here in Washington, but across the country. And it's inconsistency that is politically driven. Charles Karaku attended the rally with his family from Minneapolis. He was there yesterday and he spoke to Q13. And he said that he is happy to participate in this kind of movement.
To just bring a blessing over the city that has gone through a lot of pain.
Morgan was also there. She says she's from Washington, D.C. She's actually attended a bunch of these kinds of rallies in different states.
And I just continued with them up to Portland and Seattle.
So she's one of those outsiders who decided to come along with the traveling rally, the traveling prayer rally. And she notes some of the irony in all of this.
When I was out at the protest for Black Lives Matter, I didn't really get much backlash on not wearing a mask. But now that I've been out at worship events, I do get more backlash on not wearing a mask.
You see, some folks decided to show up to Cal Anderson Park, not a part of this particular rally, and they were there to antagonize. They were there to call these folks out for not wearing their masks. And most of the people, at least from the videos and photos I've seen, were not wearing masks, which you should not do. I do think it would make your argument a lot easier to say that you can pray safely if you were to wear a mask. I know some of you don't want to wear a mask. I get it. No one wants to wear a mask. Although that's not true. There are some people who like wearing a mask so they can say they're heroes. Those are the people who drive me nuts.
I enjoy wearing a mask so I can hide my face. It's hideous.
That part's true. It is. I enjoyed yesterday when I was at the rally wearing a mask because I don't like to smile in photos. I have resting disinterest face. It doesn't mean I'm disinterested, but that's just I look disinterested. And I don't like the smile because it feels phony because I don't have any joy in my life, so I don't normally smile. And so with a mask, as I was taking selfies, didn't have to smile. I just raised my eyebrows a little bit to pretend that I was happy.
Have you ever thought about drawing a smiley face on a mask?
No, I don't want people to assume that I have any sort of fun in my life because that would be a lie. But the people who wear a mask just to say that they wear masks are annoying. The people who show up to these rallies saying, hey, I've got a mask for you because I'm a hero, they're more annoying. One of them spoke to Cairo 7 TV.
I mean, ultimately, a large gathering of people is a large gathering of people, right? And the same rules apply there or here. You know, in the protests with our medics, we're always handing out masks and hand sanitizer. It's very disheartening and frustrating to have people come into our community and potentially be bearing disease.
Not frustrating to this protester or counter-protester, I suppose, are the folks coming into the community and tearing down Starbucks and Amazon Go storefronts and throwing rocks at cops.
According to his logic, if they're wearing a mask, they're fine, so long as they're not spreading the disease.
It's all good. We're against spreading COVID. We're not against spreading socialism. Got it. We're seeing pushback from these mandates all across the country. As you heard there, this is a rally that's been going on from state to state. It's touring. I believe it started in California. It was just in Portland, and then it came here. Where they go next, I don't know. But there's lots of people who are very upset. Some people are just actively violating it. John MacArthur is a pastor of Grace Community Church in Sun Valley, California. He held a session yesterday, and listen to how he introduced it.
Good morning, everyone. I'm so happy to welcome you to the Grace Community Church peaceful protest.
Good for him. He's 100% right. That actually is a peaceful protest. I mean, it's a form of civil disobedience, which is a protest, and it's peaceful in this case. He should expect to get hit with some sort of fines. I don't know in Sun Valley or California what the rules are there. I know they're not supposed to do this. I don't know what any of the punishments are supposed to be. But that is an actual peaceful protest. They are protesting an unjust, and I would argue unconstitutional move to limit someone's freedom of religious expression. And the inconsistency, I think, is what is really pushing people over the line. Because we'll all, I think reasonable people during a pandemic will say, look, we understand that you're going to have to limit some of our freedom in the short term not because of any nefarious intent, but because we're trying to stop the spread of a pandemic. It makes sense that you tell me not to go to a large gathering because you don't want me to get sick, and I don't want to get sick, so I'll go ahead and deal with it. I'm not giving up my rights forever. I'm just saying, okay, you know what? This makes health sense to me. Fine. But as they're sitting there, not being able to go to their church or temple or mosque or any place of worship, and they're seeing a whole bunch of protests going on, including the politicians showing up, the ones who told us we can't go to our places of worship, but you guys are showing up to a big protest, it causes some problems. When they see certain businesses being allowed to open up, but not a church or a temple or a mosque, it causes resentment. It causes anger. The kind of stuff that I just said in the last segment should end up inspiring us to being more civic-minded, to making sure we're doing just a little bit more when election time comes around. On that topic of the inconsistencies, Bill Barr, Attorney General, was on with Mark Levin over the weekend.
They should have broad authority in an emergency to deal with disease. And, you know, and many of the measures are critical to undertake. But the Constitution doesn't take a holiday, neither does civil rights, civil liberties. They have to be balanced against these measures. And the measures have to be reasonable and tailored to address the government's interest, putting the least burden on rights. That's the correct balance to strike. And guess what? Some governors, I think, have gotten some things wrong over the past 6 months. And sometimes they've been capricious and arbitrary. And when those things happen, we've called it to our attention. And most times they've corrected it voluntarily without us suing. So if they allow theaters and other get-togethers, but then they put stricter limits on church, that's a violation of constitutional rights. The church should not be treated worse than some commercial operation.
Is that an unreasonable position? Is it unreasonable? You can hold a whole bunch of different views on what mandate should be in place or what mandate should not be in place. But should it be easier? Should it be easier right now to go buy sushi than it is to worship your God? I would argue no. You don't have a right to that sushi. You do have the right to worship as you see fit. It turns out it's not only difficult to go to a church, it's also difficult for me to go to my asthma doctor. I have a doctor, and I'm assuming this is policy of all doctors everywhere, where I have asthma and I have really good insurance. And I like to make sure that I always have extra albuterol inhalers because they're covered pretty well by the insurance, and I am a hypochondriac. If I assume that I don't have my asthma medication on me, I will then have an asthma attack. Now, otherwise, from an asthma perspective, I'm fine. I'm breathing fine. The only time it's bad is when I have, if I get a cold or a flu, then it becomes something. I haven't seen my doctor in a year. I asked for a refill on my albuterol. And then I got the phone call from the office, and I know exactly what it is. The doctor has a policy, has to see you before he does this. We'll go ahead and give you this, but you have to see us within the next few weeks. And so they call me. We go through that. As much as I like this doctor personally, he's impossible to get an appointment with. Just absolutely impossible. So I'm throwing out all these dates. The end of this month, nothing. So then I'm going into next month, nothing. Then they thought, oh, no, we can do it on September 13th or whatever that Friday is. I say, fine, cool, do it, 8:30 a.m. When would you like to come in for your COVID test? What are you talking about? Oh, you have to go in, you have to come in for a test 2 to 3 days before your appointment. I'm looking at the calendar. I'm not available 2 to 3 days before the appointment. So then we went through another thing. And then finally, and I swear I was on the phone with their nurse or their scheduling assistant for 10 minutes. So I finally get a date, whatever it was. It was like a month and a half or 2 months from now. Then they say, okay, here's the location of the place. And it's really good. The testing site for the COVID is in the parking lot of the hospital or the doctor's office that I go to. Ma'am, do I need a car for this? Yeah, you have to have a car. I don't have a car. I don't own a car.
Do you think you can Uber there?
I don't own a car.
Can you?
No, I'm not Ubering. I'm not taking an Uber to go get a COVID test and putting my driver through that, nor am I paying for that.
How great would that be, though?
It's the worst driver, thing in the world.
The driver would be so honored to be driving Jason Rance to his COVID test.
So she responds by saying, okay, well, you can go to this other place where you can just walk in. It's further away. And I said, no, I'm not doing it. And I just said, look, I'm done. You don't have to put in the refill. I'm not going to see the doctor. If I have any problems with my asthma, I'll call you guys. And I just hung up. I was so annoyed. I was so annoyed. And I tried to do that friendly thing of like, I'm not mad at you. I'm mad at the system. But I was also mad at her.
It sounds like it, but now...
What a ridiculous policy.
Now because
you're... To go to my asthma doctor, I have to have a COVID test. So what if it's an emergency? What if I'm having an emergency and I just can't breathe? It's been 2 days. It's really bad. Sorry, we can see you in 5 days, but you got to go ahead and get the COVID test first.
And not having your asthma medication makes you want your asthma medication even more. You're going to have a panic attack. You're going to go into an asthma attack. You're going to die
so
one of
ridiculous.
These days.
Have you ever... Does your doc... Do you have you been to a doctor lately?
I haven't been to a doctor in like 6 years, Jason.
Send me a text, guys. Tell me if this is what other people are doing, because it's driving me nuts. 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. And by the way, if you're a doctor who can give me like a better referral to a doctor who doesn't make me go through this, I'm in the market for a new asthma doctor. It's nuts. 1-800-465-8770. It's Jason Ranch. Back to the Jason Rance Show. Really do appreciate you tuning in. We're keeping an eye on this developing story as we get more and more details as to a shooting outside of the White House that briefly interfered with the press briefing. A Secret Service agent whispered to the president and he was whisked away. It was done in a calmly fashion. But one of the reporters with Fox News, John King, came out and said he heard gunshots. The president then came out and acknowledged, yes, someone was shot by law enforcement officials. We don't know many details beyond that, but we are seeing some images coming in right now of Secret Service administering medical aid to the suspect. It's believed to be just one suspect who was shot. I just posted the video. It's not graphic. Over at twitter.com/JasonRants. If you go there right now, you can go ahead and see some of the video that's starting to come in as we get some more details as to what actually led up to the shooting. We'll certainly deliver them to you. But for now, you can check out some of the videos at twitter.com/JasonRants. I watched a sports game over the weekend.
Wow, a whole sports game?
A clip of a portion of a sporting event that I saw on Twitter.
So you didn't watch any of the game itself?
I watched a pitcher from the Houston Astros throw the ball towards a player on the A's named Ramon Laureano, and I saw him get hit. And apparently this was the third time Ramon was hit by a pitcher from the Astros over the three-game series. And as he was, well, first he pointed to the pitcher, whose name is Humberto Castellanos. He pointed, just pointed, like, you, I know what you just did. And then he went to first base. And then they started to yell some more. But at some point, Ramon then turned to the hitting coach, Alex Cintron, who's just, he's outstanding. Everyone talks about how good he is.
Nobody cares about Cintron.
But they started to get into a back and forth of just yelling. And then all of a sudden, God bless Ramon, he decided to rush at the batting coach and the benches were cleared and it was just pandemonium. And when something like that happens, it's always fun to watch.
For somebody in the Astros dugout, we've got a little fight going on.
Oh my God.
This is not supposed to happen with the social distancing, but
is it supposed to happen without the social distancing?
Yeah, it's part of baseball. Come on.
It's not hockey. You don't normally see this.
It's part of baseball.
It's not supposed to happen. No one's wearing any masks.
Once every 3 weeks.
Oh my God, they're fighting. It's not supposed to happen. Laureano ran over to the Astros dugout, and now somebody getting into it, Martin Maldonado. Grossman has Castellanos.
Uh-huh.
Laureano ran at the Astros dugout.
This horrible play by
after
play.
There were some chirping. Obviously, everybody can hear everything these days with no fans. Dustin Garneau may have been the first one out to meet him. Laureano's going to be taken out of this game for inciting that.
Okay, so that was way more exciting in real life than it was in the play-by-play. The dude, Ramon, gets tackled, got two people on top of him the entire time.
Well, announcers aren't supposed to... They're not supposed to make the brawl sound good because the MLB doesn't want it to be glorified. Even though they're going to be using this on their social media platform for the next 3 weeks.
Everyone loves this.
Rob Manfred doesn't want this glorified.
That guy is a jerk, and I don't agree with him.
Rob Manfred is awful, and he's the worst commissioner in all of sports.
Commissioner. Yes. Oh, no. Yeah, I know. I was going to say he's a commissioner.
I know. I just dropped that in there so you would remember.
No, I remembered.
I'm aware.
You don't seem aware. It sounds like you threw it out there thinking I wasn't going to know that. What's his name?
Rob Manfred.
I was going to say that. Rob.
I know. I read your lips and I wanted to just beat you to it.
There you go. Speaking of the A's, can we just talk briefly about Ryan Christensen, who's a bench coach? He had to apologize last week because he used a gesture that looked like a Nazi salute after a game. And he said it was unintentional. Mediaite notes, Christensen raised his arm with a flat palm when greeting players after a win against the Texas Rangers. Their closer, Liam Hendricks, was clearly startled by the gesture, immediately bending Christensen's arm and giving him an elbow bump. Christensen then bumped the elbows of the following teammates before chuckling and quickly making the same raised arm gesture a second time. Now, he has since apologized, tweeting, "My gesture unintentionally resulted in a racist and horrible salute that I do not believe in. What I did is unacceptable, and I deeply apologize." So, I watched the video. I weirdly believe him.
No, don't defend him.
Because I'm not defending him. Obviously, what he did was wrong. Says the Jew, by the way, in this conversation.
I understand that. You have some weight in this, okay?
So, he did the Nazi salute. Afterwards, as the pitcher, the closer, bended his arm, the coach turns and he kind of makes a joke of, "Oh my God, I was just doing the Nazi salute." I honestly think he unintentionally did it. I don't think he realized it.
No, I think that's something that he does behind closed doors, probably like as a joke. And then the pitcher was like, "Yo, there's cameras out here. You can't do that." And he was like, "Oh," and then.
But he did it again afterwards. Again, I think just to say, "Oh my gosh, I didn't mean to do it." Like, I'm weirdly on his side. It's Jason Rancher.